This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard the Adam Ritz Show. My name is Adam Ritz, and Jay Baker is joining me on the phone. Jay, such a pleasure to have you back on board with the public affairs knowledge you have. Thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hope you are, too. And yes, someday I'm going to live my life long enough to see the Adam Ritz Public Affairs Institute open. And you and I know we're going to select a great location, a location where we can go out and maybe get a little sand between our toes or some sun in our eye or something.
Yeah, that Public Affairs Institute in Nassau, Bahamas
might love that.
You know, we could have sister locations, one in Nassau and one in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You can go to the St. Paul, Minneapolis office. I'll be in the Nassau office.
Listen to you. Let's open a location in the middle of Iowa near a town we can't pronounce.
No offense to our listeners up in the land of 10,000 lakes, but yeah, the winters aren't something that I look forward to there.
No.
So this past week, we had a huge, huge national holiday. I don't know if you had your tree up for Global Running Day, but the first Wednesday in June is Global Running Day, and a lot of people celebrate this. There's a lot of running groups that get involved with it. I heard about it through my gym where I work out. I was actually there on a Wednesday, and somebody said to me, "Happy Global Running Day."
That's funny.
So I did a little research and found out there's some history behind Global Running Day, formerly known as National Running Day. So I don't know at what point National Running Day didn't cover it, and they had to go Global Running Day to try to get people outside the United States to put their running shoes on and actually go run with us the first Wednesday of June.
Well, and of course, it's my ancient joke, but whenever anyone looks at me and goes, "Well, you see, I went running," and then my input is always, "Voluntarily?"
Yeah, right. You wanted to do this?
You volunteered to run. Okay, go on.
Well, somebody said to me once when I used to run a lot, I not to pat myself on the back, but I did a couple Chicago marathons in my youth. The hips and knees can't do it anymore, Jay, so I don't mind telling you about that now. But back when I used to run a lot and train for that stuff, a friend of mine said, "You can't enjoy this. You're not smiling when you're running." In fact, since he said that to me, every time I'm driving to work or driving somewhere and I see people running on the trail, I look to see if they're smiling. And not many people are actually smiling while they're running.
Not as many as you might think, right? No, I'm with you.
So when I do actually get out and try to do a couple miles, I always force myself, try to smile just in case someone's looking going, "Oh my gosh, look, there's one person that's enjoying this."
Well, isn't it funny that you and I have actually done marathons and half marathons, et cetera, but when people see us, they poke us in the middle like the Pillsbury guy and go, "You guys never ran. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on."
Hard to believe looking at us now.
Yeah.
But so the first National Running Day was in 2009, and in 2016, that's when it became known as Global Running Day. And on that day, June 1st, 2016, more than 2.5 million people from 177 countries pledged to run more than 9.2 million miles.
Wow.
So you have a year now. We just passed Global Running Day. So you have about a year to train for next year's Global Running Day, and hopefully you can get in on this action. Jay, it doesn't matter if you run 100 feet. You just got to be involved.
No, I think that you're absolutely correct, and I am with you. Running is not for everyone. but it's kind of a natural motion. If your body supports it, go out and do it. And then, as you said, if you get into kind of a collective thought process, every little bit helps.
For sure. And, you know, the wise thing to do is consult your doctor before you go on some huge running excursion. But if running isn't for you, walking is a close second. Just getting out, getting about, getting your heart rate up. Every time you're out in the neighborhood walking, that means you're not sitting on the couch eating Hostess. So walking right. is still such a great activity for your heart health. So happy Global Running Day to you, Jay, and everybody listening. Hopefully you got out this week and enjoyed some nice weather and got your steps in.
No, I appreciate you saying that. And I will share with you my feeling, because when I got in shape later in life myself, I used walking as a big tool. And I always told people, because people would go, well, you like walking or you're doing a lot of walking. And I said, yes, walking is great if you're nosy. And they go, well, what do you mean? And I said, when you walk down the road, it gives you an opportunity to glance left and right. You see the neighbor that's restoring something in his driveway. You see the woman that's planting bulbs in her garden. I mean, it gives you a chance to be nosy without being intrusive.
It really
does. It's a lot of fun. It really is. I mean, all of a sudden, you're the neighborhood know-it-all.
When you approach that house and their garage door is up, that's when you slow down and really take stock.
You look around and you go, man, that guy's got better tools than I've got.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So organized. Look at all those totes perfectly placed. I need to clean my own garage.
And my wife would be the first one to look at someone else's garage and go, how come our garage doesn't look like this? And
it's That's
like,
right.
Oh, look. Look at that cloud that looks like a pony, is what I always say.
Yeah, no, you're right. When I go on a walk with Melissa, when we pass certain houses, if they have something that looks great or looks nice, some hedge work or landscaping or something's on their porch, my honey-do list just got longer.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct. Well, as you know, Adam, as you're out and about enjoying the great outdoors, we're rapidly approaching mosquito season. And a lot of people don't know the actual mechanism. I'm not telling you this to gross you out, but what happens is the mosquito lands on your arm, sticks that little needle into your skin, and then later when it departs, it puts a little of its saliva into your skin. Now, here's what's interesting. Most of the time you get stung by a mosquito, it's a non-event. You get a little bump and some itching, but mosquitoes, sadly, have been famous in the past and present for spreading disease like dengue fever, West Nile, and Zika. And, you know, what's funny is you hear that list and you go, well, you know, dengue fever can't happen here. But we have this weird thing that goes on in our world. Sometimes these things jump borders, jump countries, and you have to be extremely careful. You have to now be aware that mosquitoes can be a health hazard.
Yeah, and you know, that's another reason to keep ahead of your lawn work. I know when your grass is out of control, or weeds, or just extra foliage along your fence line, it's just a breeding ground for moisture and mosquitoes.
Yes, you're absolutely correct about that. And if you're looking for a repellent, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that if you are looking for long-lasting protection, you should look for these active ingredients. We didn't want to make too long of a list, but these are the ones that are sort of government approved, the biggest one being DEET, and that is D-E-E-T. There's also an ingredient called IR-3535, picardin, or oil of lemon eucalyptus. And you got to be somewhat specific, because some of these repellents will be listed as all natural ingredients or natural this. The government and FDA, as well as the Centers for Disease Control, are saying be very careful that you only use repellents that have sort of approved.
Do you know, Jay, now you were pre-med in college, a biology major, is that correct?
I am and was, and yes, and sadly I ended up in broadcasting, but go on.
Yeah, that sort of an odd career choice after pre-med, but my point is, I don't know the answer to this. I think you have a pretty general, a great general knowledge of the human body and anatomy. When I'm sitting on my deck with Melissa, and yes. Mosquitoes seem to be most active right around dusk.
Yes, they are.
And the sun is going down. She will inform me of her 293rd mosquito bite, while I have had maybe one. So, are mosquitoes attracted to a different blood type, a different a pheromone, a skin type? Why is she getting devoured? Is it her perfume or the shampoo she uses? She's getting absolutely devoured by mosquitoes, and I maybe get a bite.
Well, you're not wrong. Some people just have somewhat of a natural attractant to mosquitoes. It can be something as simple as blood type. It can also be sometimes mosquitoes are listening for heartbeats. Your spouse or partner might have a slightly more attractive heartbeat. Sometimes, believe it or not, one of the shows that we did talked about colors. There are certain colors of clothing that seem to attract insects, and there are other colors that are somewhat neutral to insects. And you're right. I mean, there's all these variables because my spouse, speaking of, as you said, my spouse will walk out on the deck, come back in and loudly tell me about how many horrible mosquitoes we have because she either did battle with them or got bitten by them.
Yeah, you know, and maybe you mentioned they listen for the heart rate, or they can sense
yes.
a heart rate. I do know
yes,
for a fact my standing resting heart rate is lower than Melissa's. So she's got a higher heart rate, a higher heartbeat. Maybe that's the key. And as I was asking the question, thank God you didn't say, well, it's a fact, Adam, that mosquitoes are drawn to cleanliness. And since you're such a dirty, disgusting human, they don't want to have anything to do with you.
Your grungy exterior has been a natural, adherent. Yes, no, it's kind of all over the board. And so if you think about it, the repellents that we talked about are one line of defense, but you can also help yourself if you wear long sleeves and long pants. Now, harder to do, as you know, Adam, during the summer months, no one wants to go out there with a long sleeve shirt. And it was funny you mentioned dusk, because dusk and dawn, most types of mosquitoes tend to be more active at those times.
Oh, you can certainly sense it. I sit on the deck and they show up, and I hear about the 290 bites on Melissa. I have one or two. That's also the time of day when I water the flowers in the backyard. I get a couple nibbles
yes.
on my ankles. But after the sun sets and it is absolutely pitch black outside, when I go outside to take the garbage out or do another project in the driveway or whatever, not one mosquito can be seen or felt. So I do know that
correct.
Dusk, and if you've spent time in Florida around dusk, the no-see-ums are out of control. And I don't know what the no-see-ums relationship is to the mosquito. Has to be a close cousin, if not a twin brother. but these mosquitoes or no-see-ums or nicknamed no-see-ums, you can't see them. They're so small.
You can't see them.
You cannot
so
see
tiny.
Them. And they are like tiny little microscopic piranha. And you will get just chewed up if you're
yes.
at the marina in Southwest Florida right at sunset.
Yeah, you're not incorrect. These bugs can really, really, really cause some real itching damage, as you said. And here's what was interesting. I had some relatives that had a home across the street from an abandoned high school. And you would think, oh, well, you know, abandoned high school, that sounds terrible. But it was an old brick structure, and it actually kind of added some quaintness to this little community. But of interest, there were several hundred bats that lived in the attic of this old high school, and they would come out at night and eat mosquitoes. Consequently, my relatives never had a problem with mosquitoes ever while living there because the bats took care of the mosquitoes. Now, that can't happen everywhere, but isn't it interesting? In the animal kingdom, party A dines on party B.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And I don't know if they went all summer without having one mosquito bite, but they had 400 bat bites.
Yes. Well, I didn't mention that. Yes. And one of my relatives is now radioactive and is part of the Marvel Comics universe.
Now he's a vampire. He is a vampire.
He's a vampire. Well, that's a sad part of the story.
But at least he doesn't have any mosquitoes.
No mosquitoes. But here is of interest. Mosquitoes need water to breed in, so you need to get rid of any standing water on your property. That could include a bucket of water or kiddie pools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't mean you can't have the kiddie pool, but they're pretty easy to refill, so you should probably dump them out to keep the mosquitoes at bay, because mosquitoes are a problem. And they do, sadly, in some instances, carry disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Now, Adam, I don't know how many times you've had to do this, but moving is a part of Americana. However, everything about searching for a new home to packing all the boxes, hauling everything out of your home is a huge undertaking. And apparently a new survey is saying that Americans who have moved in the last 5 years, 25% of them consider moving to be more stressful than losing a job or switching careers.
Well, that makes sense to me now. I thought you were going to say that 25% say that moving is stressful. I would say that number is 100%.
Yeah.
If you're saying, if you're trying to compare it to losing a job, yeah, that's, I would say losing your job would be way more stressful than packing and moving. But yeah, there's nothing fun about packing or moving.
No, absolutely not. So new survey says people are talking about that moving is a stressful life event. Now, the average American has already moved 5 times during their lifetime and expected to have to do it about 3 more times in the future. So I don't know where you're at on that timeline. But I thought that was an interesting note, that most people have moved 5 times, but another 3 times could be happening soon.
Yeah, I definitely have one more time in me. We're looking very passively for our next abode. And so one for sure. And through this process, I am not looking forward to moving or packing. So that's not something I want to do. I'm certainly not saying that it's going to be as stressful as losing a job, but it will be stressful. And it's also one of the reasons why we haven't moved yet, because I don't want to move twice.
Right. So we want to make sure it's for the right situation.
So we've found a couple places. We're on the fence. We could do it. But I'm like, I know I want to move again. So I don't want to, moving twice means packing twice. I don't want to do that twice. So we're just holding out for that perfect place. We're in no hurry. So time is on our side. And we will definitely go through this stressful procedure one more time at least.
Well, I will tell you that we recently moved, and my spouse moved because we had moved to a community, but it dawned on her that the way our community is set up, there's a lot of walkability. So she said, if we're willing to move one more time, and we could move again, who knows, but if you're willing to move one more time, we can move closer to the walkability. And as it turned out, she was absolutely correct. But the caveat is any kind of move, even if it's something like that, is still very stressful.
So are you moving again?
No, we moved again.
This was your final move.
The last couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, probably I would say semi-final move because you never know. But yeah, it was funny. We had moved and we both said, oh, what an advantageous move. We really love it here. But as we lived in this community, she said, hey, the closer we live to point X, and you could point to point X on a map, if we move closer to X, we're going to be happier. And she was absolutely correct. So it is interesting sometimes even why you move. The biggest reasons people move is to start a new phase in life or to have access to better opportunities, to live close to family. And some people, 23% of people, according to this latest survey, said that people will move to get outside their comfort zones. Have you ever met anybody that said, hey, I've just been a little too, maybe it's just been way too easy for me to live in this town. I'm going to expand my horizons.
No, I have not. I don't know anybody that said living here has been so easy. I think I'd like to make things harder on myself, so I'm going to move somewhere else. I have not heard that.
Apparently, 23% of people said they want to move outside their comfort zone. I will make this mention. I have had a handful of friends who in the last 5 years have moved completely out of town to move outside their comfort zone. But then later, as they move to a community and they don't have a lot of friends and relatives nearby, have kind of said, you know, maybe I moved a little too quickly, not really thinking it through. Because I've always thought to myself, you could point to any spot on a map and say, I'm going to go live here. But you and I know, unless you've got friends, family, support, it's not the same.
Correct. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And if you've got young children, you're going to need that network. So the older you are, the more empty nester you are, the more easier it is, I guess, to move somewhere where you don't have that support system. And, you know, I would argue even that if you didn't make new friends, that really wouldn't be the end of the world for me. I kind of don't mind just staying in the house and watching Netflix. That actually sounds like a place I'd want to move to, a place where there isn't anybody I know.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Now, during the moving process, the average person gets rid of about 36% of their stuff. So they get shed of about a third of what they've kind of, take an assessment and just go, yeah, I don't need this now, that badly.
If you're moving to a smaller place, that makes sense. But if you're moving to a house with more square footage, are you getting rid of that stuff just to get new stuff? Or you're just, maybe you don't even want to move it because it's a hassle? When you moved 2 years ago, what was the worst thing you moved? What was just the headache?
The headache was the sheer length of time that it took, because we had moved from a fairly large size house. So that sounds bad on the air, doesn't it? Well, you know, I moved from my DuPont estate in upstate New York. It's, you know, but we had lived in a fairly big house and we enjoyed collecting things. So it was like if you bought a piece of art or, you know, you brought stuff home from work, we had enough room. You just put it right there in the den, you know, enjoy. But one of the greatest moves we made was from that size house to a house that was about a third the size, because it allowed us to downsize. Now, we were living in the smaller house, and to go back to what you asked me, we downsized even further, even though we moved into the exact same sized house, because it dawned on us if we made one big downsizing, that downsizing in general is a pretty positive mental process.
And that fit the math perfect. If you moved into a house a third smaller to get rid of 30% of your stuff.
30%, yes.
Now, the stuff you got rid of 2 years later, are you? What's on the list that you're like, oh, I wish I still had that?
Not a thing.
Not a thing.
I've always said, you know, it's ironic, you know, the human mind is such that it just erases that part of the magnetic tape that says, I really miss that autographed football. You know, you don't miss it as much as you think.
You don't really need it. You really don't need
that's,
you know, there's an old George Carlin bit about your house is just a place for your stuff.
No, and, he's not wrong.
Yeah, and if you get more stuff and there's no more room for your stuff, you got to get a bigger house. So then you got to get more stuff. And then when you go on vacation, you need to take a smaller version of your stuff with you. It's just a great bit. Old George Carlin, you could Google that and YouTube it if you want. But all right, so moving, almost as stressful as losing your job or changing jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to get the best possible moving experience, respondents suggested giving yourself a lot more time than you think you'll need for packing. Get rid of clutter and stuff you don't need. Ask for help from loved ones. And this was their biggest tip. Hire a moving company, because so many people think, oh yeah, I'll drive that U-Haul truck to some place in the middle of Nebraska.
Yeah, you know, if you do it yourself, there's some problems. You always a problem or two you didn't even think of. There's a great story. My daughter lives in Chicago, and we found out the hard way that when you rent a U-Haul, you're not allowed to drive it on Lakeshore Drive, which is the main thoroughfare through, you know, on the coastal side of Lake Michigan in Chicago. So if you are renting a U-Haul, you maybe do a little research to find out where you're moving to, if they allow trucks on the street you're trying to drive on.
Interesting. I had not heard that.
Yeah. Weird.
Well, and going along with moving, Americans continue to see real estate as the best long-term investment. This is according to a Gallup poll survey. Americans say that real estate ownership is the best long-term investment. That's been going on now 12 years in a row. Respondents have said that. Is that kind of, I mean, just to kind of delve into you personally, do you still see real estate, Adam, is a good investment?
It's been a crazy few years. Anyone listening right now that's been looking at houses over the last 5 years is shaking their head yes. We found, just top of my head here, we found a house in 2020 that was $400,000, and we didn't get it. And that exact same house today is on the market for $750,000.
Wow.
The exact same house. So
I know
prices are just going through the roof. And, you know, if you have equity in your house, that's the great news, that prices have gone up so you can get a big down payment. But the bad news is the house you're going to buy has gone up too. So that's another reason why we really haven't pulled the trigger yet is, and maybe this is a terrible idea, but we're sort of waiting. Maybe interest rates go down. Maybe prices fall a little bit. I don't know why the housing market in the last 5 years has just gone insane. I don't know. It can't keep going. This $400,000 house 4 years ago that's now worth $700,000, there's no way in 4 years it can be worth $1.2 million. But that's the rate it's going right now.
No, you're absolutely correct. When you look at housing prices, it's almost crazy. Stocks and gold are number two and three in the survey, but real estate still number one. And as Adam pointed out, even in communities that have not had huge real estate growth, the homes continue to go up in value, at least a percentage of what they are right now. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. In my mind, I have actually, and maybe this is not the right emotion, I feel slightly guilty how much our real estate has gone up, but that's nothing that I've done. You know what I mean?
Well, you haven't destroyed your home or trashed it. You've made a lovely home for your wife and your pet, and it's reflected in your equity. So, you could sell it right now, cash in, and just go live under a bridge with all that money.
<'Cause> What a great idea.
That's what you've learned today on this Public Affairs show.
That's what I've learned
Cash
today.
In your equity and live under a bridge. All right,
good
Jay.
Day, sir. Now go out and be a good citizen.
Thank you so much. For our listeners, you can join the fun on our website. We've got every single past edition or episode of this show in podcast form if you want to listen to those for fun. They're listed in order, chronological order, at AdamRitzShow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.